Right before we hit the news, we were speaking to Frankie in Metairie, who is running for office this time, last time, once again. Frankie, what's your story with this electoral process here?
Yeah, you know, I'm getting too old to do the running, man. I got a hurt hip. I'm a host for Jazz Fest. I don't need to be doing this. I've qualified for the legislative branch basically because of the fundamental rules, right? We're supposed to understand this. It's supposed to be of the people. Well, I don't see either of these parties satisfying that quotient.
I've been
trying to do this from a grassroots perspective for several years now.
Okay, so if you're just tuning in and you have no idea what the hell Frankie and I are talking about, Frankie called in just about 10 minutes ago. He says, hey, man, we're moving into this closed primary system. It's confusing. Nobody that's not within 5 feet of Jeff Landry seems to think it's a good idea. So, you know, what are the consequences for somebody like Frankie, who's no party, but wants to run for higher office? And I don't mean like dog catcher or some sort of low level commissioner. I'm talking about, you know, like you said, the Public Service Commission, Bessie, any statewide office, congressional races, that sort of thing. So just to clarify, Frankie, because this confused me too. If you are no party, that doesn't explicitly mean that you can't get on the ballot, but it's a sneaky way of making sure that you'll never win. It's effectively a kill shot, because if you're no party, then you don't get to run in a primary election, which means all that time spent, you know, if you're a Republican or Democrat and you have to compete in a primary, the debates, the town halls, the earned media that you get from participating in that election, that is denied to you if you're no party. If you're no party, you basically have to show up at the last minute and hope that you've made enough of a splash independently with no help from a major party to be competitive on the ballot. And that is the longest of long shots.
Well, I tell you, the winning of anything, that's a different question. This is a being able to compete with your ideas. So I could be a Green Party guy, and I was registered Green Party originally when I moved out here 30 years ago. But if I'm a libertarian Green Party or other, which there's 6,000 of, there's only 2,300 Green Party individuals. If they wanted to muster a Senate candidate, they can't meet the threshold of signatures required. It's 2,500 signatures arbitrarily set. Now, the governor just reduced the requirement for one office or the next down to 150. I will tell you this, any signature is a threat to the individual citizen's identity. It's a wet mark signature that you're required to get. This makes somebody vulnerable to identity theft in a way that nothing else, no other piece of information you can divulge is that important. So this is a requirement that's unreasonable to ask of any citizen to do. So it's not even, I've tested this. When I come to a parish worker or any kind of civil servant, they won't deny it because they're threatened of retribution, because all this information is going to be public. So anybody who signs a petition, well, it's going to be known that they signed it. So anybody who has an influence politically could be influenced politically is at risk. Again, this is basically just a threshold that's unreasonable. It's also a qualification to legislate for the union that goes beyond what the Constitution specifies. There are only two requirements. You have to be a citizen for a number of years in the place where in the United States, and you have to be of a certain age. And these are fundamental. You know, last year, I spent $600 to qualify for the House of Representatives. I went out knocking on doors. I don't need the media. And I'll tell you, that extended time, that primary, I actually think will work to the favor of a third party.
Really?
Yeah, I'm going to have 10 months of a campaign. Look, in 2.5 months, just knocking on doors, grassroots, I got 6,700 people that don't know me to vote for me. Ian, I raised a child, single parent. I might know 100 people, and I guarantee you half of them didn't vote for me. They don't like me, you know? I mean, and maybe for good reason.
Frankie, I get it. I get it, man. Okay, so I think we understand, because you've done a great job explaining it, the kind of risk to people who want to put their signature, you know, on the petition. In your own words, Frankie, explain why you think, you know, power brokers in Baton Rouge, whether it's this governor or the next, would do something that, and I think there's a fast answer here, so I'm kind of setting you up. It's a little bit of a softball. Yeah. Why would they do something that makes it impossible for you to get money, that makes it impossible for you to get endorsements, that makes it impossible for you to get media coverage, and that shoehorns you into being like a protest candidate. You know, the guy with the traffic cone on his head, or the rent is too damn high, like that kind of thing. Like, yeah. like a not serious candidate. They've done this to narrow the accountability that they have to the voter.
Absolutely. And this is more about them disqualifying those outside candidates, those outsider candidates you refer to, because I'll tell you what, I am very comfortable just being a citizen candidate. I am very comfortable without money, without endorsements. In fact, I'm using that now to get what petition signatures I can. Mm-hmm. I'm using that as a sell point. I don't need endorsements. Those endorsements are bought. Look what happened to you in Orleans Parish here. When the AFL-CIO endorses the three front runners, is that really an endorsement? They can't go out on a limb and endorse one person and got the top money?
That's too hard.
At some point, the voters, this falls on the voters, and I tell everybody when I speak to them, I said, I don't fault a shark for being a shark or rats for going after cheese. This will require an ourselves correction. I'm making that case. Now, they've made it so, I don't know if we resonated enough with 6,780 votes for them to take this action. I think this is just a copy-paste of other states' actions.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, it's an infringement on a privileges and immunities clause within Article 4, Section 2 of the Constitution. Straight up. Right? This is a privilege of mine to be a candidate for an office. This is an immunity from one state's laws infringing on me versus another. This is fundamental liberty. This is the power of self-determination.
I think.
So to me.
Go ahead.
Yeah, they're basically, this is an extinguishing of even having a protest candidate available. And that's why I've done this. I've done this to be to protest basically the form of legislative government.
I think it's so interesting what you're doing, Frankie. Like you really are serious about it, in that you're like, winning is secondary. You know, if I win, great, that's a great bonus. But the tip of the spear here is for me to get myself into the conversation and have a sort of debate along ideological or even like philosophical lines. You know, like, what are we doing here? How is this democracy supposed to function? And I think that's really admirable, and I wish you the best of luck. I did want to say, you know, you said this might be a sort of a copy paste thing that we got from other states, and from what I've learned about our closed primary system, other states have closed primaries, but they also have ranked choice. They also have an opportunity for independent candidates to qualify earlier so that they don't have to, you know, sort of disappear at the same time that Republicans and Democrats are running in a primary. You know, that other states give their independent candidates an opportunity to build momentum or secure, you know, secure a victory in other ways. Louisiana does none of that. It's literally just the people in power turning around and kicking the person behind them in the face and making sure they fall back down the ladder.
Yeah. Well, it's exactly a situation. I wouldn't have found this if they had advanced the primaries. If that hadn't made the news, I would not have found this evidence, because basically this law reaches back in time. By the time I find out mid-November, the time to gather signatures began September 25th of last year. Mm. So it's a crazy disenfranchisement. I had to build a website. I had to try and rush to do things that I wasn't planning until next May to qualify. That's the usual schedule. You know, in some aspects, you know, if there's 800 people that aren't a Republican or a Democrat and they want to see these two parties challenged, they can go to nomoreparty.com. They can come by my house, Homer Boulevard. It's public knowledge. I'm at the council meetings all the time. If you want to slap these two in the face, you know, we need 2,500 signatures to give the Senate a run. We need 800, but it's 10 days from now they got to be submitted.
Frankie, you sound like a really smart guy. I can really tell you're passionate, and your head and your heart are both in the right place. Promise that you'll keep in touch as this moves forward, okay?
Absolutely, man. I'm sworn to support and defend. I got to do this.
Got to do it. For the people. Frankie, for the people. Thanks for calling in, brother. We'll talk again later. We'll step away and take care of some business, get another look at traffic with Endless Joe Cardosi. And when we come back, we'll be speaking to, what's his name? Henry Young from Avari Research. Why can't I get anybody to call him Parkies? I'm Ian Hoke on WWL. I'll be right back after this. Hieroglyphics there. If you know, you know. Joining me on the line right now is Henry Young. He's the founder and CEO of Avari Research. Henry, welcome to the show. Thanks for making time. Nice to meet you.
Hey, Ian. Nice to meet you. Thanks for having me.
I've been trying to make something happen here in New Orleans, and so far New Orleans is telling me to kick rocks. There is a local brewery here that is much beloved. It's called Urban South Brewery, and they make a beer called Paradise Park. And it's a cute little can. It's like sort of like seafoam green. It's got flamingos on it. Everybody loves Paradise Park. It's quaffable. It's inexpensive. It's the Miller Lite killer. So I'm enthusiastic about it because, you know, you're supporting a local business. So I got tired of going up to the bar and saying, I would like a Paradise Park. And I just started saying Parky because it's shorter and it's easier and it sounds cooler. But it hasn't caught on. I've been telling all my friends, hey, man, next time you go to the bar, order a Parky. We're not ordering Paradise Parks anymore. We're ordering Parkies. Hey, Coleman, pick me up a Parky on your way home. Hey, man, let's go to the park and have a Parky. It has not caught on. And the reason I've asked you here today is to help explain why. How do you make a nickname stick? How does a viral nickname become part of the zeitgeist without anyone ever giving permission for that? Like, the culture decides, not the brands. Why do some of these phrases, these nicknames, why do they go viral overnight while even good ones like mine just kind of die quietly?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me. And I recognize that it can be a lot easier to order a Parky than a Paradise Park.
Right? Yeah.
And yeah, I think the thing about great nicknames is that they just have no friction. They're easy to guess what they stand for. They're naturally used in conversation, and people sort of come on board with it because of those factors, because it's so easy.
So, okay. So you agree that Parky is a good nickname. On a scale of it could still happen to stop trying immediately, where do you think I stand?
I'd say somewhere in the middle, where it definitely could use a nickname, because Paradise Park is pretty long. But to me, Parky reminds me of the word Pookie, right? Like an endearing nickname for your
Pookie?
For your significant other. Yeah,
Pookie. Give me a Pookie. Give me a 12-pack of Pookies. Okay, so...
That's a cute nickname, right?
Yeah, it's
and
pretty
for a
good.
Beer, I don't know if you're going for cute. Is that fair to say?
No, I'm not going for cute. I guess I would concede that Parky is kind of cutesy, but not cute. But I don't know. Sure. I just think it sounds so much more authoritative just to lean up to the bar and say, hey, man, give me a Jamie and a Parky, you know, rather than a Jameson and a Paradise Park. But I don't know. I guess I'm just too close to my own genius, Henry. But anyway, all this stuff about Parky got me kind of thinking about names like Kleenex and Band-Aid and Coke. Like, sure. When we say get me a Kleenex, we're not talking about Kleenex brand Kleenex. We just mean tissue out of a box. It doesn't matter who manufactures it. If I say Kleenex, everybody knows what I'm talking about. Same with Band-Aid. The Band-Aid could be made by Johnson & Johnson, or it could be made by Volkswagen. It doesn't matter. Everybody knows what I'm talking about when I ask for a Band-Aid. So how do we go from that? Like, is that just dumb luck that those brands became sort of the catch-all meaning for every product in their field, even ones that they don't make? How did that happen?
I think for them, it's a lot of luck because they're legacy brands, right? You know, Kleenex was one of the first companies to introduce products like that. Same with Band-Aid, same with Google for searching stuff up, same with Escalator for escalators. I think part of it's definitely dumb luck, and part of it is just, does it really make the user experience easier? Parky's a nickname that definitely makes it easier, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want to say Paradise Park.
Are there any real patterns to what sticks other than whoever got there first?
Absolutely. I think something I have been thinking about ever since you said it with Parky is there are nicknames for alcoholic beverage brands. Like, the first one that comes to mind is Twisted Teas, are often referred to as Twees.
Really?
And I think, yeah.
How come Twisted Teas gets to be Twees and Paradise Park? I'm incensed, Henry. I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's some nonsense. All right, keep going on. There's Twisted. I've never heard anybody order a Twee before. I don't know. In a New Orleans bar, that might get you something you're not looking for. But you were saying Twisted Teas became Twees. What else?
Well, there's a pattern to it, right? When I think of folks that might order a Parky, obviously I'm coming from a young generation here, and so I think about fraternities and sororities and how beverage brands are maybe a part of that culture. I think about how Twee came after the two terms Taos and Bouse, which stand for top house and bottom house on a campus. So the best fraternities, the best sororities are Taos, top house, and the worst are Bouse, bottom house. that same abbreviation carried over to TWI, Twisted Tea. And so I think if you follow the patterns, yeah, did you know that?
I had no idea. And now that I know, that's so illuminating. Thank you for sharing that. Okay, great. Oh, we're all learning so much, Henry. Keep going.
Yeah, well, I think that just goes back to reducing the friction, right? You want to make the name as easy as possible to remember. So fit it into the way nicknaming conventions work now. And you want to make it easy to understand that it stands for Paradise Park. And so if you go with, you know, the idea of the TWI, P-Dice might be something that sticks with young people.
P-Dice. Give me a Jameson and a P-Dice.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I would give it a chance. It's no Parky. But obviously what I'm doing isn't working and you're the marketing expert, so maybe I should shut the hell up. Okay.
Well, look, the other thing I'll say is you can have different nicknames for the same product. And even your own name. Like, think about, my name's Henry, but my people in my parents' generation call me Hen, and people who are a lot younger tend to call me H. They have the same thing. Both stand for Henry, but both are preferred over Henry.
Whoa. Okay. So Coleman, my producer, just reminded me that Natural Light became
Natty Light.
So that had to happen kind of organically, right? Because who wants to go up to a bar and order Natural Light? That sounds ridiculous.
You're right. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure.
How lucky for the manufacturer that the consumers figured out a cooler way to order their product. Like, they didn't have to. Like, it makes me think about Fireball. Like, people don't really remember this, but Fireball used to be called like Spencer McGillicuddy's Cinnamon Whiskey or something like that. And that's a terrible name for a liquor brand. So they just changed the packaging and started calling it Fireball. And next thing you know, it's displaced Jaeger and SoCo and Lime as like the go-to shot at bars all over the country. So, I mean, these brands must feel pretty thankful when something like that happens to their product. Like, their consumers take ownership over the branding and the manufacturers like don't have to do anything. That must happen more often than we realize.
Oh, definitely. I think it happens all the time. And a good part of it is social media, right? A good part of it is that when somebody does come up with a great idea, a great nickname, it can spread very, very fast now. And you just made me think of another one, by the way, for Busch Light Apple called Dapple.
No, I've never heard of any of these. You know about Bapple?
There you go.
Coleman, my God. Okay, I'm going to go to the bar tonight and just discreetly eavesdrop over every conversation that happens where somebody comes up and they order a TWI or a Bapple. I mean, maybe I should be going to like a college bar because they seem like they're the ones who are really doing the legwork here.
They would definitely have it there for sure. And I think Bapple, the brand, really played into it there because it's only available in the fall.
So, Henry, this is Coleman, the producer. I have to ask, how many nicknames come from like natural, societal, you know, verbal, and how many of them were actually like, they were like the brand owner was in a room somewhere and they was trying to decide on what nickname to give a product and try to sneak it in there as if it was natural and organic, not knowing it was completely manufactured?
Excellent question.
That is a great question. And, you know, I think very few. I think you can tell by the marketing material a lot of the time, right? Like, Coca-Cola always refers to their product as Coca-Cola. They're never going to call it Coke, but all of us call it Coke.
I think, well, they would say, like, I feel like I've seen Share a Coke somewhere. Like, haven't I? Yeah, it's like Share a Coke with Jordan, Share a Coke with Coleman, like on the 20-ounce bottles. But that was like a very specific campaign. They don't do that all the time.
You're right. And, you know, I think it goes back to that idea of the brand can suggest a nickname, but if you push it too hard and it doesn't stick, you've really dug yourself into a little bit of a hole there.
Yes.
So I think what the smart brand does is they put a nickname out there, maybe with a specific marketing campaign like Coke, or like Share a Coke. And then if the consumer adopts it, it'll spread naturally on social media. And if you keep doing that enough times, you'll eventually find a winner, I'd say.
Well, I can't tell you the number of times I felt like a moron walking up to the bar and just casually being like, hey, yeah, good to see you, Mike. Let's see. What do you want, honey? Okay, she's going to have a White Claw and I'll have a Jameson and a Parky. And I just play it totally cool. And I just act like it's the most normal thing in the world. And 99 out of 100 times they say, sorry, what did you just order? And like squint at me like I got horns growing out of my head. So So what do I do? What's the solution for me, Henry? Do I go back to Urban South and say, hey, guys, I got a $1 billion idea that I'm giving you just for free here. Just put up one billboard that says, you know, give me a parkie or something. I mean, what's the path forward for me in this?
Oh, I mean, my gut is thinking this obviously needs a nickname, and maybe it's Parky, maybe it's P-Dice, who knows what it could be, but I would make a competition out of it. Maybe, yeah, put up one billboard, put up a few billboards, let people ask for whatever they think a Paradise Park should be, and let the bartender decide if that's an appropriate nickname.
Okay, so I've got a live text-in line here at the radio station. So I'm going to ask you, if you're listening right now, text me on the Oakland Art Jewelers talking text line, 504-260-1870, and you tell me what nickname for Paradise Park you think is better than Parky. If you can come up with something better than Parky and it sticks, then you win, you know, imaginary fake radio points. But I don't think anyone's going to come up with anything better than Parky. Like, somebody texted in and said, oh, shoot, where'd it go? Here's a text that says, sorry, Ian, Parky is not cool for a grown man ordering a beer. Oh, I beg to differ. We disagree about a lot of things in talk radio, but this is really getting my hackles up. They would say it's not cool for a grown man ordering a beer. I would suggest Para Park. P-A-R-R-A-P-A-R-K. Okay, so you're Avari Research. You're the founder and CEO of this firm. What's your top line reaction to Para Park?
Well, my top line reaction is let's encourage everybody to come up with a different nickname, and then by default, every time the bartender hears something they don't recognize, they'll just give you a Paradise Park.
Urban South is like furiously writing this down right now. That's brilliant.
Wait, I have an idea.
What?
Instead of calling it a noun, call it a verb, like, oh, I'm about to go park right here. Or if you want two of them, can I double park?
That's, yeah, take me to paradise, bartender.
Take me to paradise.
Yeah, make it a verb instead of a noun. That might work better. Park me.
That is so funny. Okay, yeah, park me. That already sounds like something we do, that we order a drink. We'd like beer me or claw me or twee me. I don't know, right? Okay, at what point does this backfire on the brand? Like you said just a moment ago, if you try too hard to make it happen, then it becomes kind of cringe and it dies faster, right? Have you seen that happen before?
Definitely. Yeah, I think when you try to force something to be culturally relevant, it often backfires. It's definitely a process that has to be somewhat natural. And so that's why I think the best approach is for brands to suggest, for them to put nicknames out there, but ultimately you don't want something to be adopted mainstream unless people are fond of it, right? Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah, you don't want to end up with some people adopting something that's not good for your brand. So it sounds like the real lesson here is that, you know, the culture doesn't always reward effort. You know, it rewards repetition and timing and virality and alliteration. 100%. And if you can do that, then you're in good shape. All right, Henry. Well, maybe we changed some hearts and minds here today. We'll take a break in just a minute. But I'm curious, and I'm asking people this kind of all week. At Avari Research, what are you looking to in 2026? Like, if I'm in an elevator with you and you say, hey, what do you do? And I say, I'm in talk radio. What do you do? And Henry Young says, I'm the founder and CEO of Avari Research. And this year, we're going to be looking at
connecting, especially with young folks on social media. I think it's a real pain when your favorite influencer does something that's very obviously an ad read. And I think there's a way to make advertising feel a lot less abrasive, a lot less ad-like, and so we're working that.
Okay, well, in that vein, I'm going to enjoy a Paradise Park with a po' boy that I drown in blue plate mayonnaise, and we'll talk to you on the other side. Nice speaking with you, Henry. Really, really nice to meet you. Thank you for your time, your work, and your way, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
All right, take care, brother. If you're on hold, stay there. I'm curious, what's the best example of a nickname or a phrase that you've seen catch on, like without anyone planning it? Has anyone else ever tried to make something like this happen and it just never worked? Or maybe it did work. I don't know. I know there's a lot of you listening right there with a lot of different experiences. I'll also read through some of these suggestions for Paradise Park that people think are better than Parky. I thank you for your participation. We'll see if any of them rise to the top. But just between you and me and the wallpaper, I doubt it. I'm Ian Hoken for Scoot. Be right back. Okay, let's see here. On the Orkinard Jewelers Talking Text Line, I got a handful of suggestions for nicknames for Urban South's delicious Paradise Park beer. Here's one. A couple people suggested Double P. Like, I go up to the bar to order a Double P. That's only like one less syllable. Like, Parky is still faster. Double P. Double P? I don't know. I guess I could try that out. If Parky doesn't work, I don't think Double P is going to work. But obviously, I don't know what the hell I'm doing because this didn't work. Here's a text that says, call it Party, P-A-R-D-I. Reminds me of that part in the Mask where he goes, P-A-R-T, why? Because I gotta. Here's a text that says, you don't want to shorten Paradise Park to pee-pee because I absolutely don't want a can of pee-pee. Alliteration be damned. It's a Parky. It can't be too cute. It's a pink and green can. It's supposed to be cute. Another texter says, oh, yeah, and they beat us to the punch. This person had heard of Bapple for Busch Light Apple, which I would. Have you ever had a Busch Light Apple? I know you don't drink a ton of beer.
No.
I would crush a Busch Light Apple. Yeah, that sounds delicious.
For some reason, I tend to stay away from beers and alcohols that taste like fruit. And like, I don't know. I can't do it. I tried Crown Apple and Crown Vanilla and all that.
When you and I went out, didn't I tried to get you to have a Purple Haze or something. Didn't I one time, one of the Abita fruit beers?
Yeah, it was the Juicifer.
Oh, Juicifer's good.
I prefer the Rye Iron.
It's kind of fruity. This person says you could order a flamingo. I don't know, brothers and sisters. I appreciate everybody's creative input on this, but I'm still not seeing anything that spins my bow tie quite like Parky. Here's another text that says a catchphrase that caught on. 6-7. We're not doing 6-7 anymore. It's a new calendar year. We're putting that dark chapter in our history behind us.
So a few weeks ago, I tried to do 6-7 and it didn't feel right.
Yeah.
So what happened? Here's the scenario. So we were coming back from break and I was looking at how much time Newell was going to have. And I said, and I was like, you're going to have about 6-7 minutes. And it felt icky.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's like, we got to take a shower. Okay, let's turn our attention back to the Orkinard Jewelers talk line real quick. Let's go to Paul in Michigan. Paul, thanks for listening. Brother, you're on the air. What's up?
Yeah, good afternoon. So before I get to my subject, I think the end of the death of 6-7 has occurred because I heard a politician refer to it. So I think the cool kids are going to drop it.
You're exactly right. It's like when they did the Macarena at the Democratic National Convention, or when Hillary Clinton dabbed on Ellen, you were like, oh, it's over. Yeah. This thing has jumped the shark. Okay, so good. Maybe we're done with 6-7. We can all be so lucky. What's on your mind, brother?
All right, so I didn't hear the entire interview with the guy who was talking about Baton Rouge. Not allowing a third party.
Yeah, that wasn't a scheduled interview. That was just the guy who called in.
No. Yeah, I'll go back and listen to the podcast because I'd really like to hear what everything you said. But I don't think most people realize that our first two presidents were not members of political parties.
Yeah.
Both Washington and Adams were definitely opposed to the government recognizing parties. Parties can still exist. They could be nothing more than political action committees when they found a candidate that they were like-minded with and wanted to support. You know, whether Republicans, Democrats, Whigs, or whatever they wanted to be, they, you know, could throw support behind them. But, of course, Jefferson and lost for the name right now.
Who's after Jefferson? But, Madison?
No, it doesn't matter. Washington surrounded himself with people who had difference of opinions. And so it was Jefferson and this one I can't remember were the ones that basically led our country down the path of a government recognizing parties. And what I'm always concerned about is when people in Congress talk about members from the other side. You know, instead of all of us just being one. Someone said to me, well, what you would prefer, parliamentarian? It's not like that's the only two choices.
Right.
But even with parliamentarian, we would have the option of vote of no confidence. And so somebody could be removed with that. I don't know. This division and political divisiveness that everything has led to now is, I don't know how we dig ourselves out of it, but I hope someday we figure out a way.
I hope someday we figure out a way to. Paul, I hope you are staying warm up there. Thank you so much for listening, and enjoy the podcast when you get to a little bit later. Let me jump over here. Where'd my texts go? Hang on. Everybody hold your horses here a second. Let's scroll back up here. Yeah, Steve is listening, and he says, Coleman and Ian, I just Googled Paradise Park beer, and I came up with Urban South Brewery on Chapultepec Street. It says they have a tap room with over 25 beers on tap, and smash burgers made in-house by Urban Smash. Is that where you go? Have you had one of their smash burgers? Have a good weekend. Yeah, I have been to Urban South a number of times. Before the pandemic, I think we were doing like play readings there occasionally, but I've been there just with the boys other times, and I can't remember eating one of the burgers, but the food was real good, and their beers are all good. I mean, we've been talking about Paradise Park today, but they have lots of other beers that are equally as delicious. Here's another text that says, how about just plain park? How about just plain park? Could I go up to a bar and just order a park? Hey, give me a park. Give me a Jameson and a park. I don't know.
Let's see how that goes. Hey, can I get a park? Yeah, you just go outside.
Yeah, just go outside. There's a park right out there, smartass. Yeah, just walk down the block. Mark says, Ian, you being from the West, have you ever tried Yukon Jack's Permafrost? 100% peppermint schnapps that doesn't make you puke after three shots like Rumplemints. I have never heard of or tried Yukon Jack's Permafrost, but when I was growing up, and even after I had quite grown up, anytime we'd go skiing, you always want to have a little bit of nip. You always want to have a little flask with you when you're up on the slopes, and we would usually put Jaeger in there or maybe some peppermint schnapps, some Goldschlager, some Rumplemints, but I never heard of Yukon Jack's Permafrost, but then again, we're on our skis, so you don't want to go too crazy. All right, we'll step away and get one more look at traffic, and when we come back, we'll say goodbye, hand it over to the fans and the pro. Here's a song that's really important to me and Julia, and I think it'll set us up for a happy 2026. Okay, before we jump off, I want to make sure I thank my studio producer, Coleman. Five stars, no notes. Along with Endless Joe Cardosi on the traffic and Chris Miller in our news department. Crucial thanks to Scoot for his support, executive producer Jordan Fiegel. All hail Jordan, Lord of the Nazdor, and program director and brand manager Diane Newman and market manager Dan Barron for the opportunity. This show and every show on WWL is available to hear, download, and share at WWL.com and the Odyssey app, where you can also rewind the show. You can follow WWL on Facebook, X, Instagram, and TikTok. Shout out to Matthew in Ukraine, listening to us on the Odyssey app in a trench somewhere in single-digit weather while dodging drones and living on tinned fish. Thanks to Dream Doctor Chelsea Rorscheib for helping us understand what's going on underneath the lids at night. Thanks to Craig Perong at the University of Houston with the silver tips. And I'm not talking about hair color. To Debbie Bressler from the Crescent City Countdown Club, congratulations on another great fireworks show. Hey, I wonder if you do weddings. Asking for a friend. To University of Illinois law professor Robert Lawless. Yes, really, he's a law professor and his last name is Lawless. Thanks for helping us make a really complicated story about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau not sound like an Econ 101 lecture. Lots of love to Father Doss, Nikki Diamonds, Grace the Face, D Rose, Randy the Storyteller, and the inimitable JMD. This will be our year, babe. Plus, Brett and Kat at Majoria's Commerce Restaurant. Keep those hash browns coming, guys. Hey, I got to split and get over to Portacall on Esplanade. I heard they had some issues with some unwanted guests in the kitchen and dining area, and I was thinking I could help out. It might be time to get some pet rats again. Hey, thanks to everyone who called and texted during the show. If you loved what you heard today, get a friend to listen to. Up next is Fans in the Pro with Deuce and the Moose breaking down the final Saints game of the year on Sunday. Shuck yeah. But as for me, 5,000 G, I'm out of here. We're out of here. 5,000 G. 5,000. 5,000.